Good morning, sir, and you are Mr. Welding?
Correct.
Morning to you, you may proceed.
May it please the court, I am Nick Welding, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Betty Jane Bauer Hansen. Employment grievance procedures are a structured and organized process to address disagreements between employers and employees. They promote healthy working environments and sound industrial relations by providing each party an opportunity to present their arguments or positions with regard to a particular dispute. Perhaps more importantly, they also provide each party opportunity to listen to the opposing party's side with regard to a dispute. Grievance procedures lose their usefulness and effectiveness, however, if they are interpreted such that grievance are denied access altogether to the process based purely on procedural grounds. The appellant's position in this case is that grievance procedures contained in collective bargaining agreements are remedial in nature and should be interpreted such that grievance are not denied access to the grievance process based purely on procedural grounds.
So how far does that go? That the deadlines just don't mean anything?
No, Your Honor. The appellant's position is that to the extent that there are any issues or disagreements with regard to whether or not a grievant complied with the procedures, that there is at least a consideration given to the circumstances that led to the issue. Basically, an equitable type of considerations as opposed to just a strict compliance.
And what are the equitable factors that go into your argument in this case?
Well, with this particular case, the appellant is a state employee, an employee of the Department of Health and Human Services. So as such, she's subject to a collective bargaining agreement between the Health and Human Services and her union. And she's also subject to the state personnel rules. Both the state personnel rules and her collective bargaining agreement contain the grievance procedure. The grievance procedure in the collective bargaining agreement and the procedure, the rules are very similar, and that's a multi-step process. The collective bargaining agreement is silent with regard to what's called advanced step filing. Basically, you can skip step one and file on step two. The state personnel rules specifically provide for advanced step filing in the context of grievances involving involuntary termination, which is what this case involved. So we had essentially a state personnel rules and her collective bargaining agreement grievance procedures. They're virtually identical in terms of the steps. And the grievance procedure, the state personnel rules, doesn't provide for advanced step filing. And her case involved her involuntary termination. And there's nothing within the rules or the collective bargaining agreement that states that the two grievance procedures are mutually exclusive.
Well, what about the collective bargaining agreement says the failure of the grievant to proceed to the first or subsequent steps within the time limit specified shall indicate that the grievance is elected not to file and is waived. Isn't that in conflict with the provision in the classified rules that you claim allows a skipping of step one?
Well, I think that'd be read in paramateria, and I think that the collective bargaining agreement issue here references the state personnel rules and says that discipline of employees shall be subject to the state personnel rules. So I agree that particular contract provision says that if you choose, or if the grievant fails to comply with a timeline, it's presumed that they are essentially withdrawing their grievance. Under the facts of this case, the appellant filed her grievance within the time frame allowed. She filed it at step two, and basically the agency sat on her grievance for nearly 2 weeks. So due to the lack of response, she kept proceeding through the grievance process. Ultimately, every single representative of the agency was given an opportunity to respond to her grievance. In fact, the person who the agency now claims that she should have filed with first, the record reflects that this person did in fact receive her grievance within the time frame, and he did respond, and he never raised any objections with the timing of her grievance. It wasn't until we got further into the grievance process that there were objections to where she filed her initial grievance.
Is your argument that the person with whom she did file the grievance, which is some supervisory person, had some obligation to take it to the right person and say a grievance has been filed?
Well, I believe so, yes, Your Honor. And the record reflects that I believe, did happen. The principal, who was followed within the step one, confirmed in his response that he received the appellant's grievance on, it was June 13. The grievance, I believe, was filed on June 9. So he did confirm that he received it. But I guess as a matter of just equity, which I believe is what it should be driving these grievance procedures. In fact, the grievance procedure itself says that the underlying principle of this grievance procedure is to ensure a fair and equitable treatment to bargaining unit members. So it'd be the appellant's position that if there are issues associated where it was filed, that her grievance is filed, that it be sent to the appropriate person. But really our position is that she was authorized to file her grievance at step two, both under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement and the state personnel rules, and in addition to the directive she was given by the HR director during the meeting in which she was issued her notice of termination, which I believe is a very material fact of this case when determining.
Is that a directive, or was it maliciously done?
There's nothing in the record that indicates it's maliciously done. What the record reflects is that during the meeting, her union representative specifically asked the HR director, where shall Ms. Bauer Hansen file her initial grievance? And the response from the agency director, or excuse me, from the HR director, was to file her grievance with the agency director, which is step two. Her principal, who is the decision maker at step one, was present in the meeting and made no objection whatsoever during the meeting. So it was based on the advice that she received during that meeting is why she filed it at step two and in accordance with the collective bargaining.
I'm not sure I fully understand why you're arguing that the initial grievance was filed at step two. Couldn't you just as easily argue that the initial grievance that was filed was a step one grievance, and it was just addressed to the person that Ms. Bauer Hansen was told to submit it to? And then you received a response to that step one grievance after the decision maker, it eventually got to him, and then you proceeded through the rest of the steps. Why is that not your argument, rather than saying you were allowed to start at step two?
Well, I believe, Your Honor, the reason that's not our argument is that the intent was to file at step two. The appellant believed that she was following the state personnel rules and was filing under the advanced step rule filings. And just, I believe procedurally, the reason why the state personnel rules provide for advanced step filing in the context of involuntary termination is because the decision maker who makes the decision with regard to the termination has basically already decided. So to go back to that person again and essentially say, well, I want you to change your mind, I believe it may not be as efficient as opposed to going to the agency director, someone who presumably has no interest or decision involvement in the initial decision with regard to the termination.
Is advanced step filing a form of waiver?
No, I do not believe so, Your Honor. Advanced step filing is, I believe, just to expedite the process when we are involved in cases involving termination, just due to the fact that we have someone's employment on the line, as opposed to simply just a disagreement about what a provision of a contract says. That I believe would be the policy reason behind advanced step filing, but I don't believe it's any type of waiver of any sort.
If you assume that we disagree with you that advanced step filing would be permitted under the collective bargaining agreement, are you conceding you don't have any argument beyond that?
I believe your question, Your Honor, was our position is that she is authorized to advance step five.
And my question is, assume we disagree with you on that, do you have an alternative argument?
Well, essentially that the state personnel board was authorized to make equitable considerations, namely to focus on the fact that, or at least address the fact that the appellant was advised by her HR director to file at this step. And at the state personnel board level, the hearing officer essentially said, had I had the ability to make equitable considerations, my decision may be different. Well, the hearing officer essentially ignored the provisions of the collective bargaining agreement, which says that the purpose of the grievance procedure is to ensure fair and equitable treatment of collective bargaining members. In addition to the state personnel board statutory duties, which specifically says that its duties is to ensure fairness and equity of state personnel employees. So I believe The hearing officer essentially said, had I had this authority, my decision would be different. Well, essentially, the hearing officer ignored the clear contractual and statutory duty before him. And that's essentially what we are agreeing, Your Honor, is that there at least be some consideration, some equitable considerations given to the facts of why she filed where she did. If there's nothing further, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gilbride, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Ryan Gilbride. I am an Assistant Attorney General with the state of Nebraska. I represent the appellees in this matter. The district court correctly affirmed the decision of the Nebraska State Personnel Board. The district court made findings of fact in this matter that were based on competent evidence in the record and should not be disturbed on appeal. The district court found Ms. Bauer-Hansen failed to proceed to the first or subsequent steps of the grievance procedure in a proper manner within the time limits that were specified under the applicable labor contract. Now, even if the initial grievance were appropriately submitted, Ms. Bauer-Hansen still, under the district court's findings of fact, failed to submit a timely level 2 grievance or a timely level 3 grievance.
What's the argument as to why there was not a timely level 2 grievance?
The time frame under the labor contract, I believe it was 10 work days after receipt of the response to level 1 was not received timely by the agency director.
When was the level 1 response received?
The response to the initial grievance?
Correct.
I have that in my brief, Your Honor.
July 1st sound?
That sounds correct.
Sounds right?
Yes.
And the response to that was filed July 18th?
Yes.
And have you gone back and looked at, it's 10 work days, right?
That's correct.
And July 4th, I assume, not a work day.
Yes.
There's some weekend days in there. Have you gone back and verified whether it was, in fact, filed after 10 work days?
I don't think that it was, because I know that there was some argument about the mailbox rule, but I don't think that it was under that calculation, even with the holiday and the weekend, that it was within the time frame. And plus, of course, the initial grievance wasn't filed with the correct person as well. So I think that district court was correct in its findings of fact based on the record that the subsequent grievances for level two and level three were not timely. Now, I wanted to also answer your question, Your Honor, regarding the difference between the collective bargaining agreement and the contract. And I think if you look at Title 273 of the Nebraska Ministry of Code, Chapter 1, Section 004, that discusses the difference between employees that are under the classification rules and the collective bargaining agreement employees. Now, in this case, the appellant was a teacher. And so that way she was under the collective bargaining agreement. And so the parties agreed in their agreement that level 1 and level 2 grievances were not covered. And they agreed that level 3 would be covered under the classification rules. But that was an agreement reached by the parties. Generally speaking, as a teacher, Bauer-Hansen, Ms. Bauer-Hansen, was subject to Nebraska Revised Statute Section 81-1373. She was governed by a collective bargaining agreement. Therefore, when the appellant argues that the level 1 or level 2 grievances should have been controlled by the classification rules, that's incorrect under the statute and the administrative regulation I just told you about, because she was a teacher, so her employment and the termination thereof was governed under Nebraska Revised Statute 81-1373.
I'm trying to keep up with this. Is this the factual situation that the parties initially believed themselves to be under a collective bargaining contract, but they agreed to switch lanes and go over to the classification set of rules?
That happened.
This is how it evolved? Is that something like what happened?
Well, what happened, Your Honor, is they have the collective bargaining agreement, and it provides for levels 1, level 2, and level 3. Under level 1 and level 2, The parties agreed level one goes to the immediate supervisor, level two goes to the agency head. And then under level three, if you want to proceed to that step, the parties agreed your grievance to the Nebraska State Personnel Board is governed under the procedures of...
The parties agreed within their collective bargaining contract that
yes.
we will switch tracks to this other set of rules? Is that how it works?
Just for level three
At
grievances.
At the level three stage, they go into a different lane?
Yes.
Something like that?
Yes.
Okay, and I guess the parties are waiving stuff. Did DHS waive the step one?
Well, it's not really a waiver because under Nebraska Revised Statute 81-1373, that provides for how the state employees are governed as far as their employment. And one of the employee types is teacher. That says that teachers, they're governed by collective bargaining agreements. So it didn't have to be, Your Honor, that they used the classification rules for level three. It seems that was just something that the state and the union in this matter agreed upon. Now, when we have the rules set out for level one and level two, there's no provision that says you go to the classification rules to govern level one or level two grievances.
They're
under the contract.
By contract.
Correct.
And so then I guess I'm back to my question in the context of contract concerning level one and level two before you switch lanes and go over to level three controlled by statute. Can you waive something under a contract?
I think that you can waive matters under contracts and collective bargaining agreements, but when you look at the statute 81-1373 and the administrative reg 273, Chapter 1, 004. I don't think that was done in this case because Nebraska law provides you're a teacher for the state, you're under the collective bargaining agreement rules. We had a collective, collective bargaining agreement that was entered into. I don't want to make it confusing saying rules. So you're governed by the collective bargaining agreement. Now, they reached in their collective bargaining agreement level three will be under the classification rules. But level one and level two...
I'm stuck back here on whether or not you can waive the terms of the contract with respect to the formalities of level one.
I don't think you can, as far as can she decide to, as they're arguing, go directly to level two under this contract and skip level one?
Right, can the parties acquiesce?
Well, I don't think so. I think that the parties needed to follow the negotiated terms of the contract. And the state and the union representatives negotiated the terms and set forth how level one and level two is supposed to work. And
well, as a factual matter, when she met with the supervisory individual and he said, you should file this at X place, and she does that, is that not a waiver on the part of the state?
I don't think so, and I think it goes to the question the court asked before. It wasn't malicious. It was a mistake. She didn't make a directive. It wasn't like the resource manager said, and you must file this with the agency head. She answered a question. There's no evidence that she was trying to mislead anyone.
What's the reason why filing with the wrong person would doom the claim? Is it a lack of jurisdiction? Is it that filing with the wrong person waives the claim under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement? What's the legal reason why filing with the wrong person dooms the claim?
Well, I don't believe it's a lack of jurisdiction, Your Honor. I think it's the second thing, that if you didn't file it with the correct person under level one, you didn't properly follow the grievance procedure that was agreed to by the parties in this matter. And I also wanted to inform...
But even after being told, filing it at the place where she was told to file it, then does that... It's just on her to look beyond the advice given by the person from the state?
Well, she
can't rely on that?
It's very unfortunate, but as a matter of equity, for all parties involved and future people that are appealing under the collective bargaining agreement, the facts do not show that this was intentionally misleading.
Are you conceding that we should consider matters of equity in deciding whether the rules were followed here?
Well, the statute applies equity, says equity, but I don't think that there was anything inequitable about following the rules. And also, Your Honor, the label contract discusses equity too. But I wanted to, and this kind of dovetails, and I wanted to highlight a case that this court recently decided, which was Armstrong v. Clarkson College. And that's very similar, and in that case, the court held that mandatory grievance procedures in employment contracts must be exhausted before seeking judicial review. Now, I think that this matter was different than Parent, which was a Court of Appeals case cited in the briefs, and the recent Armstrong case, because the grievance procedure was not exhausted, and the district court found that as findings of fact. I see that my time is up.
But the only reason it wasn't exhausted, correct, was because the personnel board determined that she submitted the initial grievance to the wrong person.
That's not the only reason, I would say, because there were also subsequent grievances that were not timely submitted under the contract. And then when you go to that third one, that is still, even under the classification rules that are cited by the appellant, that still, the district court found, that's a finding of fact based on the record, that still also was not timely filed, Your Honor. Thank you. If there are no more questions, we request that the Supreme Court affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we